Thank you, Joan. Thank you all for coming out. You know, New York has a lot of things, and I went back in 2004, and we have a lot of everything. Nasty people, rats, buildings, you know, everything, but we don't have you. And I mean that in all, you know, the gin joints in the world, I could not find a poets group like the one we have here in Pittsburgh. So it is a real joy to be back. So thank you. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to read from the book, Saudades Tuas, I Miss You. So saudade is a Portuguese concept, and it's a tricky one. It means longing, and longing a lot for something that maybe you had, maybe you didn't have. And I'm going to, the whole book is about this, so I hope you got all your laughs out with the preview with Jay, because there's going to be no laughing now. I'm not funny. Portuguese people aren't funny, so I'm sorry. You're going to have to bear with this. Okay. But the book is a composition of letters and poems and photographs and sculpture. So because poetry, you know, images and poetry go across a lot of different ways. So I'd like to share this with you. Segunda carta, second letter. Querida Maria, how do I explain saudade to them? If they belong to a people who look only to the future, it will be difficult for them to understand and impossible for them to feel. The Portuguese are different. We are a people who are always looking to the past. Some people think of saudade as nostalgia, but we know it is not quite that. It is more. How do I explain that saudade is a longing for what cannot be put into words, what cannot be completely defined? It is more than a longing for the past that was. It is vague, like the outline of a ship at sea, trawling ashore in a heavy, milky fog. It is impossible, like a ship that has never sailed and could never return. It is longing for what that past could never be. This makes it an impossibility. This creates a stoicism in the face of despair and a resignation in a people who wish for hope. This creates a certain comfort in wanting and knowing that what you want is more than your want and that it can never be satisfied. How do I explain saudade to them? Okay. All right. So the book is a lot about loss and longing and holding on to things. So one of the earliest memories I have is when I first went to Portugal with my mother. My parents were Portuguese, and they came over here during the war, and I was born here. My sister was born in Portugal. But I remember we went back, and it was my first trip to Portugal, and I was 6 years old, and we visited all the churches in Portugal, every single one of them. And one of them, I remember the priest taking us down to the basement, and he showed us this basement, and on the ceiling, the ceiling was completely covered with wax figurines of body parts. And I was amazed. There were breasts and arms and legs and feet. And I just, with my six-year-old eyes, just thought this was amazing. So this poem is called Promessa, Promise. The stone-etched coolness of the church basement embraced my slight bare arms with such clarity that I was both comforted and made acutely aware of my entry into the underworld. Mother took my hand. Slowly, solemnly, we walked together from one end of the earth to the other. The vast expanse of subterranean sky overhead, illuminated by shiny wax figurines, the color of grateful flesh. Arms, legs, breasts, and stomachs, hands and feet, all stretched out to greet me. I, in turn, matter of fact, this was the way of life I learned from an early age. Promises made, prayers muttered softly under breath, were actually heard, and deftly molded into opaque configurations, studying Proserpina's celestial canopy, like the twinkling seeds of ripened pomegranates. This is the world my mother wanted to show me, how some Portuguese used to pray, make promises, be heard by God, repay their debts, and with replicas of their healed appendages, embrace for eternity the underbelly of the house of God. Okay. This is for my cousin Lourdes, who died much too young. Aletria. Alitriya is kind of like rice pudding, except it's made with noodles, with rice vermicelli. Alitriya. Start with the milk. Put it in a pot. Add sugar and vanilla. Bring it to a boil. Add rice noodles. Give them time to cook. In a bowl, crack 3 eggs. Add hot milk, slowly, to give the eggs time to warm. To the heat. If you don't give them time, you will end up with scrambled eggs. Not alitriya at all. So listen closely. The details are important. Turn the flame off. Stir. Let it cool. Pour it onto a pretty plate. Add cinnamon. Part 2. Do you remember the first time I tried to make alitriya? I had returned to New York, longing for family and place of us, cousins cooking. Somehow I ended up with scrambled eggs, not alitriya at all. So I called you that night. You answered the phone. You were alive. You knew exactly what had gone wrong. You told me to add hot milk to the eggs to give them time to warm. So I tried again. The art of longing takes time to get right. I eventually got the hang of it. 3. A hospital that could look like any gleamed in the morning sun. I had left you sleeping after we had watched a telenovela the night before. Mornings usually bring possibility. Instead, they found you dead. I struggle for words to say this. They said you passed peacefully. They always say that. We didn't know then, as we were having lunch, crunching on smelts your mother had fried on the tiled terrace where we played as children, that you were gone. The phone rang. I walked down the hallway I had known as a child to answer it, was left to tell them their child had died. We could hear the sound of seagulls thrashing against the sky, screeching their lament, clear across Lisbon before rushing out to sea, just like us. We are a people who always end up out at sea. 4. We had plans. We would stroll arm in arm along Lisbon's well-worn boulevards, find a cool esplanade flanked by potted trees and Cinzano umbrellas. We would order tea and praise Caterina of Braganza and her trunkload of tea, shipped to England as she was sent off to marry Charles, for it was she that changed the custom of tea from quenching tired spirits to a place of love and respite. 5. So you see, the thing about food, and tea too, I suppose, is that it can make a place like the one we made when we cooked together. Rather, you cooked, I followed your lead, like when we were girls. We would perch ourselves like Signora Albertina's 100-year-old parrot. The motley creature was still alive when I visited last year. Lean against the windowsill, flapping our pretty feathers so the boys on the sidewalk below would look up, notice us, want to marry us someday. The only respectable choice. Salazar's ideas lived long after he died. I still have the crocheted bedspread you made. There is nothing in the world like it, cousin. I lived life without you again last night. As I tried to create that space at the sight of warm milk, sugar, vanilla, at the sight where I folded warmed eggs into steaming froth. But it was the cinnamon that caught me in the throat of the fast and hard of remembering you. Let's see. Should I have something a little bit more lighthearted, huh? God, something. Oh, everybody's going to be to citizenship, maybe. Or oh, so I work as a psychologist. I have for a long time, and I love what I do. I love working with people and helping them through their suffering. But you know, I'm not so sure I believe in crazy so much. I think a little crazy is good. So this is a poem to a little crazy, or a lot. Invitation. There is an invitation to a dress turned inside out. What seems agape, unabashed, it just sits there, taking up air, making no excuses for laying naked, open, possible. So much potential hidden again, but if we just flip the thing outside in, we are back to normal, to the ordinary, to that place where we are supposed to live. In appreciation of the smallness of every day. We tell ourselves this is what life is. This is what really matters. The maddening gestures of a loved one, an overtired child's long time coming sigh, taking pleasure in conversation for its own sake, it doesn't have to run deep to mean something. And yet, those seams with all their loose threads beg for air, beg us to take them there, where we fear to live for long. And are we so different from the lunatic who croons her silent songs to the moon, luminescent and listening, then returns to bed to sleep a peaceful night? There is an invitation to a dress turned inside out. How much time do I have? Two more? Okay. All right. Let's see. Two, three, four? Okay. Okay, an ode. How about an ode? Ode to American girl hair. Oh, streaming, flowing, easy to comb. American girl hair, I wish you had found a home on my head. 'Tis true, I have oft so dreamt of the likes of you from the day I was born. Gleaned from my mother's womb, the only little one in the nursery that looked like she was spun from a deuce's lot. I believe my father overshot. His crinkled curls mixed with mother's wily tresses ended up giving me a curly kinky mess that mixed with sweat and dirt I danced away on steamy summer days of childhood play. Mother scrubbed me clean once home until the next day when I would roam to piles of mud and sand and glee. They resorted to braiding my hair eventually. When that proved too much to bear, I found myself underneath the shears, clipped short and sweet with nowhere to go. Life seemed simple. Until it grew, again, untamed, in all directions like a bucking horse's mane. Without sharp wind to blow it back, I resorted to hair irons, smelly goo, soda can curlers to crack. The kink, the curl, the angst, the shame. Oh, American girl hair, you are to blame. And a villanelle. I never really understood Elizabeth Bishop's One Art, right? So this is my response to Elizabeth Bishop, and I dedicate this to my two daughters, Song and Uma. Another art in response to E. Bishop. Do not master the art of losing tonight. Hold on tightly to those you love today. There will be time enough for the death of love's light. Will you miss lost door keys, an hour wasted in daylight? Yes, these losses on your deathbed will heavily weigh. Do not master the art of losing tonight. You will wish you had taken the children to Kenya one night, inhaled the scent of clay, slept under a theca tree during heat of day. There will be time enough for the death of love's light. As for houses and homes traveling in and out of sight, remains of love in the bricks and mortars persistently stay. Do not master the art of losing tonight. What of human beings and their plight? You'll wish you'd stop to listen to all they had to say. There will be time again for the death of love's light. At the end, leaving you as you clutch my hand tight, as I begin to slowly fade away, I will never master the art of losing tonight, nor surrender my love for you to the death of love's light. I think the last one, it's a little sonnet. Finish, I think, off of this one. The ghosts of our childhood. The ghosts of our childhood remain crouched low in the creaky crevices of nightfall, scurrying along long-chucked schemes of extraordinary, and coming home to nest in wrestled sheets entwined in derelict dreams. Restless and fitful, some small slip of them trudges on noiselessly in Vibram's souls as we walk among the near dead, the long left behind, the better left alone. Sometimes they scavenge, those slinking, slippery little seagull scavengers, cawing and soaring, diving and plunging for morsels, craving more still, raking over silt-cake shores of memory lost, never really lost, but sequestered still, like a child's pestering will to be, caring little about immortality in those days, just a wish, to loll around in the squelching sound of a mud-laden lake or the blissful lick of frosting on a birthday cake. Thank you.